Woohoo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday!
It's Tuesday!
And it's officially holiday onesie season over here on this Tuesday.
I think you've said it's onesie season before. I think you've also said that in various seasons of the year.
Exactly, that's why it's officially holiday onesie season over here. Because it's always onesie season, but now, like, when we walk around the neighborhood in onesies, it's maybe slightly cooler and less weird.
Okay.
Perhaps a combination of both, but it's always onesie season.
It's kind of like that statement, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yes.
And this whole time, you've been someone that drinks at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And now it's finally actually 5 o'clock and you're like, I make more sense now.
I'm just extra excited about it.
It's so good.
Yes. Yeah.
What is holiday week? Happy holidays to everyone out there. We're so happy to be with you today. It's so cool.
It's so exciting. There's like an extra buzz in this household on holiday week. It's great.
Yeah.
Are we going to celebrate by like doing anything special?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, everything's pretty special.
I knew you were going to say that. Whenever it's a birthday, you're like, but it's always a special day.
I really am the Grinch when it comes to Christmas.
You kind of are.
Nothing about Christmas really excites me.
Which is surprising. Like, I feel like everything excites you.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, I guess, I background stoke, but it doesn't increase that much on Christmas.
See, I'm the opposite. I feel like I have pretty good, like, baseline background stoke, but then I get pumped for holidays and birthdays and Halloween and Thanksgiving and all the good celebrations.
Okay, well, do you have anything planned that we have to do?
No, I just want to read a lot this week.
Okay.
I want to hang out in my onesie and read books and just chill this week.
That's the big party.
That's the big party.
You're so hyped.
I'm talking up this big game I just want to sit in my bed and read books.
I'm going to have some chamomile tea and get crunk is what you're saying. That's
exactly.
What you're waiting till 5 o'clock to do.
Yeah.
Is the chamomile style.
Actually, sometimes I'll bring it out at 3 p.m. and be like, I'm just going to go and like take a nap, but actually read in my bed. Yeah, that happens. Are we going to do Elf on a Shelf?
Elf on a Shelf. No, that's never something that I did as a kid with my family.
Yeah, neither. Same here. And I was like, was my family, like, were we like fundamentally missing out on something? Do you know what? It wasn't invented until 2005.
What?
I know.
That can't be true, Megan.
It came out in like some sort of like kids book in 2005. And then it like caught on and went kind of wild after that. But my family never did it. And I was like, I'm missing out. And then I just realized I'm old.
I don't believe that for a single second, that Elf on the Shelf started in 2005.
That's what ChatGPT said.
Okay.
I looked it up.
You looked it up on the AI system.
Yes.
It just draws information from random places and has no idea what a fact even is.
It was very confident. You know, I confirmed on Google.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, did you ever hear about anyone growing up doing Elf on a Shelf?
Megan.
Everyone like talks about it now. Like, people
I didn't
practically
have friends.
Like,
what are you talking about?
Same. I feel like we're both aligning on those principles. But like, I never heard anyone talking about it now. And now people like practically write dissertations on Elf on a Shelf. So,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like we would have heard of it.
Well, that brings us to our run this weekend.
Yeah.
Because to give an illustration, a behind the scenes into how my brain works. So Friday going into Saturday, early Saturday morning, maybe 2 a.m., you woke up to pee. And when you woke up, my brain was just going through Strava titles for our run on Saturday. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, give me some credit.
Actually, it's a little unfair because I feel like usually, like, I never go into a run knowing a Strava title. I feel like 98% of the runs, you go in and you're like, I know my Strava title.
It's the best place to do jokes. It is now my Twitter, ever since Twitter became a cesspool. And when my brain was just running, it was thinking of Elf on a Shelf. And I love these memes around the holiday season. It's like, instead of Elf on a Shelf, think. And then I saw a photo of Parker Valby on, a Sharpie, and it said Parker on a marker or something.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually thinking Valby on a Sharpie, and I'm like, damn, that doesn't really rhyme very well. Parker on a marker is so much better.
So we have a pair of normal shoes, the NN Ormal from Killian Jornet, and we have what I thought was pronounced the Kerags. It's like K-J-E-R-A-G.
See, I thought it was G-Rags, but that's close enough.
Close enough. It still ends in ags.
Yes, yeah.
And we were going to go run on mags. So I brought these shoes up there, took both of them, and then at the start of our run, like a mile in or so, I get Megan to take a photo holding these normal Kerags on mags. So instead of Elf on a Shelf, it's Kerags on mags. And of course, I do this post, and everyone's like, I don't get it. It's pronounced totally differently.
How is it pronounced?
It's like Shurugs. Or something.
Yeah. That means that we just have to pronounce mags, moogs.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to change the pronunciation.
Or maybe I was doing some sort of like performance art, like commenting on the holiday season. It's actually a view of commercialization in general. It's like, I'm not going to play into this game. Instead, I'm going to do like something that totally goes against the grain.
Well, it was amazing because you ran a mile with your Keurigs.
Just holding them in my hands.
Just holding them to take a picture at the start of our run with like the mag sign in the background, and took a solid like 3 minutes in our warm up to do it. It was great.
Yeah. So I'm doing that in the middle of the night. What I heard you're doing is you're having dreams about me at Western States. You started to tell me this. I didn't let you finish it. So I was in Western States in your dream?
Actually, this also involves a midnight pee.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so I was like dreaming about Western States, and then one of us got up to go to the bathroom, which is kind of normal around here. We're very well hydrated. And then the dream continued, which is the best. You know, like when you're in a really good dream and someone goes up to go to the bathroom, you're like, fuck!
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I need to get back there. And I got back there.
You got back there?
It was great. And I got back there because it was Western States. So at like, okay, the start of the dream, you were like just entering Western States, and I was like, oh, let's see what's going to happen.
It's like it's like an erotic dream for running fans.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, struck this a little more. Let's keep this going. So we peed and then like the race started. And yeah, you know, it didn't go very well for you.
Oh, it didn't go
This is a sad ending. So you got to mile 70 and you just like went into this kind of existential place. Yeah. And you're just like, why do we do this shit to our bodies?
Maybe I didn't like wet myself down enough at aid station. You know what that would do?
What would that do?
Make a wet dream go to a dry dream.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I don't want that to happen.
We needed some more wetness in this, but you know what?
Yeah.
Peter God won.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Adam wins. Did I finish? Do you think you probably just woke up?
I woke up actually. Yeah. It's like when you're about to die and you're like,
Yeah.
And then you wake up and you were about to DNF and I was like, I woke up.
The plane is crashing is me at mile 70.
Exactly.
Okay. We have the best episode for you today. So many fun things to talk about before the holidays officially kick off. The first is on strength work and running economy. Some stories that we're thinking about right now. Then elliptical and cross training. We'll give tips on both of those topics. A new training study that's on running economy as well. Very interesting. Talk about trail shoes. CJ Albertson's wild heat training. Can't wait for that one. Strava's year in sport. A follow-up on omega-3s. If you heard our discussion last week, make sure you stick around for that. Then secrets and hot takes. Secrets are extra special today.
I am so excited for the new edition of Secrets. So next week, we have our holiday episode.
Yes.
It's going to come out on the 26th. And so we just decided this week we're going to record a secret dump episode with hot takes and stories. But the secrets that are rolling in are so good.
So good. So on our Patreon, we're soliciting secrets from our listeners. And they are so touching and so deep and sometimes very funny and sometimes very sad. A mix of the human experience, things that people haven't told anybody. So if you want to participate, patreon.com/swap, SWAP. There you also get bonus podcast episodes. We're up to episode 81, each of them like 35 minutes of answering questions. So much fun happens there. So join our Patreon.
Yeah. Thank you for entrusting us with your secrets. Some of them are so good. Actually, so we wanted to do like a little highlight and pull a few for this episode, but some of them are actually even too spicy. David was like, I feel like we need to give not a warning, but just like that sometimes like sensitive content is coming. So we chose some like mild secrets to lead us into next week. And I want to actually like publish a book with all these secrets in one spot and just feels like a warm human existence of a hug.
Well, I'm so excited because you didn't tell me which ones you chose for this episode. So when we get there, it's going to be very fun.
I'm excited.
Okay. So first thing I want to talk about is Megan's life. You have started real heavy duty strength work.
I am like popping that booty over here. It's so great.
So much booty popping.
I was like half ass booty before. Honestly, my strength work was kind of me like going down to the basement and hanging out and like strapping a light resistance band around my thighs and just like bumping my butt into the air every once in a while. But now we're taking it seriously.
Well, it is actually kind of interesting because you have been careful with strength work because of your autoimmune condition. Mm-hmm. And part of the rationale being, well, with these stress responses, inflammation responses, it's a huge amount of inflammation from strength work. You got to be careful, especially at first. And I think this new heart thing was kind of almost a fuck it moment. Whereas, you know, we like strength work. We like pretty heavy loaded strength work at times. But, you know, once your heart happened, it's like, okay, well now I need to go in with both feet.
Well, I think it was actually more the fact that I've been on prednisone for a really long period of time, which is quite a destructive drug to your bones. And as a bone health researcher, it was kind of like this like lightning bolt moment where I was like, okay, I really need to like pump my bone density and to do so like to lift heavy. And I think also that corresponding with a time in which I like want to devote time to strength training.
Yeah.
And I had this like life realization too, that if I don't have time to strength train, like 1 hour, 2 to 3 times per week, I should probably like modify or fundamentally change my life. Like that's not okay.
So have you, what did you have to do? Did you just make time for it or did you modify or fundamentally change your life?
I've had to scale back some stuff.
Okay.
And
yes.
I made some hard decisions. I was like, okay, I need to like prioritize what I'm doing and I need to bump strength training up on the like priority list, which is great because I feel so good when I do it.
Yeah.
There is like this empowering feeling of doing strength training. I would describe it as like, you know, when you go for a long run and you just kind of want to like take a nap and like listen to Bon Iver and chill. After strength training, you're like, rawr! Like, it's like this like full send, like Beyonce type of feeling. And it's different and it's great.
I identify with the Beyonce type feeling because yesterday I'm also increasing my strength work in winter and I come up. And you're like, how do you feel? And what did I say?
You're like, I feel like a fucking goddess.
I'm such a goddess.
Also, when you say that, it's like, there's something magical about you saying that you feel like a goddess. But the wild thing about strength work is like, okay, you feel like a goddess in this like 2 to 3 hour period of time. The next day when you wake up, you feel like you got run over by like a front loader.
And that's the hardest part, I think, of strength work is the initial response.
Yes. Yeah.
And also some of the most interesting physiology as we get into studies and thoughts on this topic in general is I reintroduced strength work after the 50 mile. Like all season long, I like doing things like ultra legs, which includes split squats and mountain legs and a bunch of other different exercises. But often around races, I'll scale back, or in really heavy training, I'll scale back because it's just not practical to go through those cycles. But when I don't do it for a while, the amount of soreness I get from the smallest stimulus is insane. So I did it on Wednesday and all the way to Saturday. My butt was so sore to the touch that sitting down seemed like I had the worst hemorrhoids of all time. It was so bad, Megan.
It was so funny to watch you sit down. It was this like very delicate drop into the chair. But also too, I mean, I noticed that it's not just soreness. I feel like for me, it's like the ability to lift regresses quite fast, but then it comes back really fast too, which is the exciting part. So I went downstairs this weekend and I tried to do chin-ups and like I've like done heavy power lifting in my past as a field hockey player and even like throughout some of my running journey, I could not do a single chin-up. I had to bring a chair all the way from upstairs and bring it downstairs to like do assisted chin-ups. And it was kind of embarrassing.
So you're standing on the chair, just like going up and down.
I even had to jump a little bit up the chair. Oh, it was like so embarrassing. And this is the reason why. So we're like investing in our like pain cave and we're like building out the strength element of it. Maybe we call it like the swap layer or something.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, what we need to do first is take a video of you doing chin-ups with the chair.
But
no, that doesn't show the chair.
Yes, so it looks like I'm like putting so much momentum and energy in it. But this is the cool part.
Yeah.
This weekend I went down, did 3 chin-ups. Yeah. And I feel like I'll be curious to see like how long it takes to get back to like 20 or 30. It might be a bit. But.
Well, at this rate, you're going to do infinity chin-ups the next time you're down. Because I think from 0 to 3 is pretty beyond exponential growth. And that's the physiological point I wanted to make at the start of this, is the power of the repeated bout effect. Mm-hmm. I think that the repeated bout effect is one of the most wild things in all of physiology.
Well, it doesn't even have to be like, when we say repeated bout effect, I think of like 20, 30 sessions. It can literally be one or two.
One session.
Especially if you have a background in it. And it's like, wow, like I feel like it's almost even more just like the neuromuscular activation of things turning back on.
Yeah. And the one session comment, it's like, it can be even less than that. It can be one rep. That is the craziest thing that you'll see from some of these studies, is that let's say the thing that made me sore is split squats. You can Google them if you don't know exactly what they are, but there's something about split squats that for me activates just my straight booty, my glute itself. I don't know why, because it doesn't really feel like I'm doing much with it, but it turns my glutes into like 2 dried up Christmas hams. It is so bad. And, you know, I did 10 of them without weight and it made me that sore. But in some of these studies, if you have someone just do one rep of the affecting exercise, the next time out, they can do a full set and not get sore. So it's like one of these wild parts of physiology. The same thing applies to downhill running. Mm-hmm. These downhill runnings are also eccentric loading, which is very similar to some of the things that make you sore in lifting. One rep of, or one stimulus of that causes a massive gain. And this is a really important thing to understand in training theory, that you don't need to do overload cycles or, you know, all the super compensation to reach a ton of adaptation stimulus.
Well, I feel like I see personally like adaptation in the exercises themselves. Like I'm shedding my chair. It's amazing. Like things are progressive. interesting.
So did you move the chair out of the room?
Actually, I moved it as soon as I had the chair in the room for like 45 seconds because I was slightly embarrassed by it.
Okay. I was wondering, I didn't see it in there.
Oh, no. It was there and gone very fast. Okay. This is also why like it's really convenient to have a pain cave in your basement because you don't have to bring the chair to 24-hour fitness with you. Like, I feel like I would never do that at 24-hour fitness.
Like someone, like a little kid back in like 1999 who used the parents' PC to look up website fishing. Yes. And then it's like, clear browser history.
I know. I'm like, clear my cookies.
Your cookies are so gone.
Actually, that's the nice thing about like having a pain cave is we can just leave the cookies in there. Like, cookies can stay in there. It doesn't have to go to a gym. But it's wild though, because I feel like the adaptations, like I saw them happening in terms of strength. But this weekend when we did the run on Mags, it's the best I felt running in a long time. And I think it's a lot of different things for me coalescing. But I was curious to think about like, okay, is there a neuromuscular role of like the heavier strength coming in and making me feel like I have a lot more pop running downhill?
Yeah. And I think that the studies are pretty unequivocal on that.
Yeah.
The question is exactly what type of strength work leads to these running economy improvements. So first we wanted to highlight a study that was on the connection of strength and running economy. That's just emblematic of the entire field of research, because if you're in this world, you can get a little sick of it at times of all of these studies that come out and just say, guess what? Strength work improves running economy. To the point that I'm like, we get it, guys. You don't need to study this anymore. Yeah. Tell me what type of strength work does it, and then I'll be really excited.
Give me the specifics. And also give me high-level athletes, too, because it's like, I feel like you take a beginner group of athletes and you give them anything and they're like, oh, yay, we improve. But that's also the really exciting part. Like, I almost feel like doing strength training as an athlete when you haven't done it for a while, or if you've actually even never done it, it's almost like being on Zwift. And in the early, so Zwift is the online like cycling video game.
Yeah.
You level up so fast early on. Like, you do one ride and you go from like level one to level two. Because
it doesn't require many points at level one to level two.
Yeah, exactly. But then to get like from level 59 to level 60, you got to do like 45 rides to get there. And I feel like strength training gains are very similar in terms of that like accordion effect as to how it happens.
And I love that as an analogy too, because I think our goal for athletes is we want them to get to level 10, not to level 60.
Yes. Yeah.
Because at level 10, you get all the benefits and a lot of the support without necessarily some of the risks, and especially with muscle fiber typology and things like that.
But, well, high five. That's an amazing way to add on to that analogy.
Yeah.
We just built like that. That's great. I like that.
We're an analogy team over here. I would say that we're like that, those people that were stranded in the ocean after their ship sank and then didn't eat each other. In Unbreakable, I think it was.
Oh, we would have a lot of fun.
I was trying to do another analogy. It didn't really work.
No, I'm not going to add on to that, except for the fact that we would have a lot of fun on like a stranded island together.
Yeah, unless the sharks got us.
That's true.
But if we got to the island, I guess we'd be safe. Okay, so here's the study. It was in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. It was called Effects of Strength Training on Running Economy in Highly Trained Runners, a Systematic Review with Meta-Analysis of Controlled Trials. So the reason I love this is that they said they reviewed 699 studies for five different criteria. The first is that they were competitive middle or long distance runners. That meant that they had a VO2 max over 60, which is quite high and probably excluded a lot of female athletes, even at the top level. Three, it underwent peer review. Four, greater than 4 weeks duration. And five, the running economy was measured before and after the intervention.
Okay, so they did this. They looked at 699 studies, which is a lot. I also like that it wasn't 700. They're like, we got to make this believable. 700 sounds too unreal.
Yeah, that's a good point. They probably just made that number up.
They're like, there was a great study, and they're like, we got to toss this. But they only chose five out of 699. I'm like, that is tedious. That's a really tedious process.
But I like it because that tedious process, I think, scrapes away from some of the chaff, right? It separates the wheat from the chaff, which I don't know exactly what that means, but I feel like a farmer now.
I actually panicked when you said that. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sounds like I'm like really messing up saying the word chafe.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, they need to throw some like fire and ice on that. Okay, but here's what they found. So in these five studies that they selected, they found that there was this overall coalescing in terms of strength training theory, and then they looked at that and how that impacted overall running economy gains. And so what they found was that four of the five studies, in terms of their overall strength training approach, they used low to moderate training intensity. So these athletes were not lifting super heavy. They were lifting 40 to 70% of their one rep max, which when you think about that, that's like pretty light, especially if these athletes have lifted before.
Especially compared to like traditional strength interventions that you'd see in a gym or that a lot of personal trainers would prescribe, like in 24-hour fitness or something.
Oh yeah, something that makes you have to scream to lift it. There was like no screaming involved here. It was probably pretty easy lifting.
But you're still allowed to scream.
Oh Oh, yeah. I feel like that makes you feel even more like a goddess.
I was doing a split squat yesterday, and I got to be honest, I didn't upgrade to the 35-pound kettlebell. I only upgraded to the 10-pound weight. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I was definitely grunting. I was like, Rafael Nadal, you know, when he's hitting a backhand at the clay court in the French Open, he grunts. So I should be grunting when I lift my 10-pound kettlebell.
I feel like it probably adds to the adaptation. I mean, I'm sure, I think actually there's been studies showing that it actually helps in tennis too.
Yeah, Serena Williams style.
Oh yeah, go for it. Yeah, really, really make it grunt. So what they found also too was that most of them were using also, in addition to this like light weight, they were also using lighter volume compared to what they could be doing. So they were only doing 2 to 4 exercises in terms of lower body exercises. Plus they had them do 200 jumps and 5 to 10 short sprints. And they were doing this overall for 2 to 3 times per week for 8 to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
So when you put the math together, that's actually not a lot. Like, I feel like that's probably what we would classify as like minimal dose strength training, like 2 to 3 exercises performed 2 to 3 times per week over this course of 8 to 12 weeks. That's not a huge investment.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be all that much. Like, no, I think sometimes with strength, people are like all in or all out. And that's basically what SWAT tries to push against. If your strength routine takes an hour, great if you have the time. But one, that's going to be really stressful. Two, you're probably not going to be doing it year round. So we want to really bring this together into a short window that kind of mirrors what this study was looking at. And so what they were trying to find here is, how did running economy change? And here's a quote that describes some of the past theory on running economy. Quote, running economy improvements, as a consequence of strength training interventions, have been attributed to lower limb coordination and muscle coactivation, which would ultimately increase muscle stiffness and decrease ground contact times.
Which is so cool when you think about like the mechanism of why that's happening. Yeah. And I think some of that in terms of like muscle coactivation can happen pretty fast.
Definitely.
It's like this weekend for me, I'm on Mags when we were doing our long run together. It's like, I felt like so much more added pop from just these few strength sessions adding up. Actually, it was to the point where when I finished my run, my Oura Ring was like, were you downhill skiing in a portion of that run? And I was like, thank you, Oura Ring. That's a great compliment.
You look so good. I mean, it was wild to run next to you, just how much you were popping off the ground. It was so cool. And you know what else was popping?
What?
This morning, you come around the corner from the bathroom.
Oh, no.
And you're like, hey, David, guess what? And you're like, my boobs are 8% larger.
Yeah, I did literally say 8%.
8%.
An estimation.
Estimation. Yeah. I said more like 7.5%, but it's within the margin of error, so I'll count it.
You also told me to adjust my position too. So I actually asked you for like the full viewing. I was wearing a onesie. I took the onesie down and I was like, please examine and let me know if this is 8%.
Yeah.
But I had like my shoulders forward. I'm like doing it now as I speak and my arms kind of like flexed and just pushing them together. Yeah. And you're like, Megan, put your shoulders back. No cheating on the assessment.
I like that you cheated for our assessment. And then my assessment went down to like maybe 3%. But honestly, Megan, how much pop should you get in such a short time?
I mean, 3% gains are huge.
I know. If you went, exactly. Get back to what we said before.
Exactly.
0 to 3. Next up, you're infinity and your boobs go to space.
I know. How exciting is that? Actually, I don't want my boobs to go to space. 3% to 8% is good. Beyond that, honestly, sounds like a nightmare.
I don't know. Like,
oh, this is the men versus women's perspective.
My point is that we can't look into the center of the Milky Way galaxy, but we do know there's a supermassive black hole there, correct?
Yes.
How do we not know that is an infinitely large pair of boobs around which everything in the universe revolves and light falls into? Light cannot even escape the supermassive boobs at the center of the universe.
Well, can you imagine strapping a sports bra around that? That sounds like a nightmare.
John G would be able to do it.
I know, that's true.
I believe in them.
Yeah.
That was a weird digression.
It was a very weird moment this morning. I'm glad you brought that up. It's a hidden look into our relationship. Yes.
But to summarize the study, they found a large beneficial effect size in these really rigorous study designs. And I think what they're probably looking at here, and the authors point this out, is not that strength work is indispensable, just that going from nothing to something actually is quite important for most athletes. And it gets back to some of the studies we've talked about before, that strength work changes the way muscle fibers behave over time. It's not just the activation and the neuromuscular factors. By putting your running training in a context of strength, you're going to be able to adapt better to the load, stay healthier, put out a little bit more power. And those things add up over time.
And I think actually what you said about nothing to something is very relevant, because when we talk about minimal dose strength training, like, yes, if you can devote more time to more strength training in a reasonable way, that's amazing. But so many people are at nothing. And actually, I really like that this article in the introduction, they mentioned that there was a survey in the 2008 US Olympic marathon trials that nearly half of the runners did no strength training at all
yeah.
in the Olympic trials for the marathon. And I actually believe it, like understanding yeah. like a lot of those athletes are probably working jobs and doing running as like this important side hustle in their lives. And it's hard to fit it all in.
But I think that goes both ways. Now that you think about it a little bit more. So on one side, it's like, oh, well, maybe these runners would be better based on the studies from strength training. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they wouldn't.
That's a good point.
And I just want to put the turn in the punch bowl there, that these athletes are progressing at levels that are pretty astronomical. They're in the Olympic trials. You would think that a lot of them are optimizing a lot of what they can do for their individual physiology. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've learned over time that strength is less conducive to the training they need to do to perform. So I think what that points out to me is partially that it's an opportunity, but also that it's not as necessary as the studies seem to indicate. Because the studies, and this gets to some of the complications, they're like looking forward. So they're saying, mm-hmm. we're going to introduce this intervention and we're going to have a control group that doesn't do it. And then we're going to see what happens in 6 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever the study design is.
But it's usually only, the looking forward is usually only 6 to 12 weeks.
But also you introduce almost any stimulus in that period of time and you'll often see improvements because the cool thing about the body gets back to the repeated bout effect. You introduce an adaptation stimulus and the body adapts. And often those adaptations can peter off and then maybe there's downsides that come to the fore. But the petering off and the potential negative sides of it, I think are not often seen because how are you going to design a 10-year control study where you're like, hey guys, you don't do strength work. Like who's in the control group there? So it points out that there are some complications. I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as the review makes it seem. But it is a huge opportunity to probably do this with very little downside, I think, for most athletes.
Well, congratulations if that was like supposed to be a turd in the punch bowl. Yeah. It was a deuce in the punch bowl. That was, you kind of nailed it. Kind of like the Grinch of strength training over there.
Well, I just left a little pause in case we have to edit this out.
Why?
because you said that was a deuce in the punch bowl. Another look into our relationship. Is this okay? On, I think it was Sunday morning.
Oh no.
You were like, David, come here. Come here. At 5:30 a.m. And I'm like, oh, this must be important. You bring me into the bathroom and I'm not going to get into details, but our listeners can imagine what it is. You were so excited to show me the fruits of your labor.
Oh, it was great. It was scientific. I was like, I have a very healthy microbiome.
Yeah. Maybe that's at the center of the universe in the middle of the supermassive black hole.
But then you actually asked me, you're like, Megan, I want to learn from you. It was a very educational conversation.
I did a scientific study. I was like, okay, I need, you know, it's like that scene in When Harry Met Sally, where she fakes an orgasm to show that women are often faking it.
Yeah.
And then that old lady's like, I'll have what she's having. I saw what you brought me in to see and I'm like, I'm going to have what she's having. I need that in my GI system.
You started quizzing me. You're like, have you done anything differently recently?
It was cute. You had. It was cool.
Yeah, I had answers.
A topic for another day, perhaps. So that gets to some of the complications. And, you know, I think one of the other problems, I was thinking about an analogy to baseball stats or any sports stats. You'll often see this, that they're like, if you draw enough lines of barriers, mm-hmm. like you'll say, how many players in baseball history have batted over 273 with 12 home runs and 27 stolen bases and 96 RBIs over the course of this long? And eventually you can draw enough of those little lines that you have like the answers are Willie Mays, one of the best players ever, and then some random schmo who no one's ever heard of. So it points out once you start drawing a lot of lines and start measuring a lot of things, you can get weird results. And it's not always that, you know, this means that this is the best thing you can do. It's just, it's a little more complicated than that.
Actually, what you just described was an excellent example of what's called p-hacking in the statistical world. It's like run enough statistical tests and like don't report them. Because whenever you run a lot of statistical tests, you need to say in your journal or in your manuscript, like, I looked at 35 things and I found this one finding because like maybe it's a spurious or random conclusion. But what you just described was like a perfect example of p-hacking.
We need to measure the boobs every day.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Instead, 3% is just normal fluctuation.
Yeah, instead of an advent calendar. We need to have whatever the equivalent would be for measuring that.
Milk. You know how they give you like chocolate each day? You just get like a little square of milk.
Sure. I like that very much.
This has gotten weird.
Yeah,
I like
it. That's how it's supposed to be.
I know. It's because it's onesie season.
Okay. So let's have some takeaways about strength work before we get to some of the other topics. And let's quiz you since you're really starting to commit to this. And I think our listeners generally know our usual approach to strength work is things like mountain legs, which are step-ups, split squats, single leg deadlifts, lunges, rear lunges. You can find all of our routines online. Look up the Ultra Legs routine if you really want to get into that. But you're taking it a step further. And We're upgrading the pain cave downstairs. We're getting a squat rack, a hex bar for deadlifts. We are going to level up. And so when do you think that might be something for athletes to think about?
Well, I think for me, well, first of all, leveling up is exciting. And it's also exciting because we ordered it online. So yeah. I'm just picturing all these like Amazon drivers ahead that are just delivering these like 45 pound plates. And they're like, what the fuck, guys?
I actually, after we record this, I need to go put like an envelope of money outside.
Actually, yeah. We should just give a plate of Christmas cookies.
Yeah.
We should spread the cheer. And you should do it as the Grinch.
Well, I actually saw a really funny thing on Twitter that was someone making up potential options of different tech, you know, things like on Hinge or whatever. But there was one for Amazon mm-hmm. where you could pay your driver $5 to give them the opportunity to go pee.
Oh, I love that.
Because, you know, Amazon does sometimes like the schedules are so wild that drivers had to pee in like gallon jugs and
things.
I was
going to say, we should just give Christmas cookies in a jug. Yeah. Maybe, like we're giving back to society. It's sad. It's
kind of sad.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I'm doing this essentially because I think, you know, I'm postpartum. Yeah. I'm coming off this like period of long-term high-dose prednisone use. And both of those scare me in terms of like bone density and even just like the foundation of like my muscular like body and build. And so it's like, I want to get strong. Plus it feels empowering. I want to feel like a goddess. And so I think I'm thinking a lot more about like loading my spine.
Yeah.
And so I'll do things like deadlifts and squats and, you know, the standard like mountain leg stuff. And then a bunch of things like chin-ups and really working my upper body too. And I'm excited. Yeah. It feels fun. It feels empowering. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be a fragile Beyonce.
No.
Because that's an oxymoron. It does not exist.
It does not exist. Exactly. But also I want to put this to good use. So this is like, I'm scheming. I have this like long-term scheme going on. I would love to get into rock climbing I want to have like a functional use for my strength training. I just don't want to like, I don't want to just like develop a Beyonce butt for the sake of it. I actually want to do shit with it.
Well, I think it'll also help with your like running.
I know. You're trying to get out of rock climbing, aren't you?
I'm really trying to get out of rock climbing. It's like, Megan, in what circumstance would I ever trust you to tie a knot? I don't know.
I mean, when your life depends on it, you'd probably trust me. I would think about it a lot.
My life depends on it is exactly when I wouldn't trust you to tie a knot.
Well, I got to level up.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you got to trust me. You got to work to, I mean, this is like part of why rock climbing is going to be good for us. It's like, we got to be organized. We got to be efficient. We got to have, I think the communication part we're good at, the organization, the efficiency, not so much.
Well, on Sunday, if we fish that thing out, we could use that as a rope that would never break. So maybe that's a good idea. Actually, before we get to the elliptical, let's do a quick transition to a new running economy study that just came out.
Oh, I love this.
Because I think it builds off this. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go over this very fast, but it came out just last week in the International Journal of Sports Medicine. It's called The Effects of a Regular Endurance Training Program on Running Economy and Biomechanics in Runners. So we should have talked about this before, but for running economy, essentially the amount of energy it takes to go a given submaximal pace. So improved running economy means you use less energy. That's a really good adaptation. This looked into how much does running economy improve when you introduce new training stimuli, and how can we think about this over the course of a training intervention?
And I think it seems obvious to me that like if you introduce a new stimuli to anyone that's newer in running, they're going to respond to it rapidly. But I think my big question is like, okay, what happens when you're working with athletes that have invested a lot more time and you introduce a new stimuli? Like, what are the types of gains that we're seeing in running economy?
Yeah, and so the way this worked is it divided 24 male runners into two groups, 12 recreational and 12 well-trained. They both did tests before and after this intervention of like 4-minute run tests. And then they did 8 weeks of endurance training, including intervals and strength. So just a well-rounded plan. And the really interesting finding here is that running economy improved by 6.15% and 7% in the two groups. So getting to Megan's point, in the well-trained group, running economy also improved by a lot just from doing this well-rounded training routine. So, I mean, it's very interesting. I think it's kind of a no-shit study in the sense that, oh, running economy improves, but it's more than I would have expected in the well-trained group.
Yeah, I think to me it was the effect size that was the wow factor here, because I would not have expected to see such parallel increases in both groups, including the well-trained group. That to me was really curious. But another big takeaway actually that I found was that the maximum height, so they had these athletes doing a 5-jump plyometric test, and they were measuring the maximum height in the test. That maximum height actually decreased by 4.55% in the recreational group. And I think it gets at something that when we're doing strength training, the purpose of strength training and plyometrics is not to be good at strength training or even to look good. The purpose is to feed into overall endurance. And I think if you're doing strength training correctly, like sometimes I think once you level up, you're going to get to a point where you stay at level 10 in terms of like, you know, you don't need to actually progress to level 45 or 50.
You're sprinkling some controversy on this discussion. discussion.
I am wading into this.
There's some that really recoiled, and there's some that have no idea just how controversial what you just said was.
I know.
But that
should I be scared?
No, because I agree 1,000%.
Yes, yeah.
And we're a team. Yeah. Much like the 1984 Los Angeles Lakers. Another analogy on your ass. I'm crushing the analogy game right now, Megan.
You are so crushing it.
But the 5-jump plyometric test decreasing in the recreational group that's introducing training is probably indicative of muscle fiber recruitment changes.
Exactly.
They're becoming more slow twitch over time. And that points out the complications of strength training too, in the sense that a lot of strength training ideas are about getting stronger, about inducing hypertrophy, and all of those things. But Megan and I actually have a great perspective on this. Coming from power sports, I was able to dunk when I was young with a very small basketball. If I could palm it, like a baby basketball, but I couldn't palm a regular basketball. But now I would be surprised if I could touch the net.
I was going to say, I don't know if you could dunk on our little tykes hoop now.
You mean the 3-foot tall hoop?
Yes. Yeah.
That's probably true.
You're like, I'm gripping.
You're right. So the point being, like, I think a lot of approaches to strength are about becoming more powerful. And that could actually pull in the opposite direction of endurance adaptations in some instances. Mm-hmm. So you want to be strong. You want to support slow twitch muscle fiber development and slow twitch muscle fiber strength. You don't necessarily want your type 2 fast twitch muscle fibers to become more recruited and more strong. That's why our types of strength focus so much on a little bit lower weight, but still weighting, and higher rep. Because you start doing numbers of reps at very, very high weights, and you're going to see weird responses over time. And that's what the studies are not showing yet because they haven't measured it, but it's something to be really important, careful about.
I love that you highlighted that. And for me, it's like when an athlete comes to me and wants to go on this like strength training journey, much like I'm on, I'm like, great, let's do it. But let's also be cautious too. And I think that's where, like, if you're working with a strength coach, really talking to them about like their endurance principles and why they're doing what they're doing.
And their background with advanced endurance athletes.
Exactly. Like, I want to see them not be training like NBA players. Like, let's see them training like some endurance athletes and understand like the underlying physiology and principles behind it. And to me, that's so helpful.
Yeah. And that's why I think getting better at box jumps, I think, is very rarely going to be the right adaptation for runners.
Unless that feeds your soul and you're okay. Like, I think like sometimes I coach runners that is just as important to them as running. And I'm like, okay, we can have that conversation.
You're taking the little, it's like you sprinkled controversy fish flakes on top of the aquarium.
And then I'm like, let me scoop them all up.
You're taking them all back.
No, I'm not taking them all back. I'm taking some of them back.
Okay.
Because some people love strength training for the sake of strength training. And I'm like, sow your wild oats. Like, that's
for
great,
sure.
But understand the context.
But I guess my point is they're not powerlifting. And if they are powerlifting, good luck with that and, you know, report back. But, you know, I think it's just interesting. I think what this study does show too, on the more direct applications of it, is that by introducing any well-rounded training intervention, you can improve a lot pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the message out there to athletes that kind of just go out and run every day, think they're not worthy of this type of intervention, is do it. You can see, I mean, this was an 8-week intervention, seeing 7% improvements in running economy. That's massive. And so do your hill strides that we talk about. That's the most important thing of all. Go out and run easy. Do some light workouts. They don't need to be that hard. And yes, do a little bit of strength training. Incorporate that stuff year round at all levels. And you can see these big jumps that then feed into future jumps and future jumps and future jumps. And the reason we focus on running economy, which is a little bit controversial in this world for some reason, is that it is the number one determinant of how fast you can go. And how fast you can go is the number one determinant of how well you're going to do at ultras.
Yeah, I'm actually confused why it's a little bit controversial. I mean, it just comes down to physics.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about it, I'm like, it's how fast you move in an economical way. So that's a little bit confusing to me.
Yeah.
But question for you. So say, like, we know that you throw new stimuli at athletes and they seem to have this like general response in performance and running economy. How do you periodize that throughout the year? Because, like, you know, if you have an athlete that's, we want to throw consistent bricks into the wall, but at the same time, we also want to introduce new things. And so how do you structure that? And how do you have those conversations with athletes?
My main thing is that I want to keep an athlete near their peak output year round. I want them to be fast in a short distance sort of way, like 20 or 30 seconds. That is the most important thing. There's a limiter for a lot of aging athletes, especially. And then keep their aerobic system humming with low intensity. Those are the two things that don't necessarily get periodized much, though maybe the strides will go away for a week or two at a time here and there, maybe a little longer before races. But then other than that, basically everything gets periodized. Like, you know, the types of stimuli, the intensity of workouts, the amount of steady running, all of that. How about you?
Yeah, I say much the same. I also think that rest is a really important component in here too. And sometimes I feel like it creates that like blank a little bit more of like the open canvas in which you can throw stimuli on and have new adaptations and new responses that help you level up. And so I think whenever an athlete like needs rest or is in a period of forced rest, it's like, oh, let's embrace this because there will be new stimuli, new adaptations ahead.
I love that. Okay, do you want to talk about the elliptical or get to news and fun things?
Let's get to news and fun things.
Okay, we're going
to
skip the elliptical.
Let's go through it. Maybe really quick, we can skip the study.
Okay, three points.
Yes.
First, we talked about the elliptical and how valuable it is. Cross training can be great for your running economy. We got a lot of feedback about toes going numb on the elliptical. And we would just want to say, via the experience of Megan, she goes out down there and often does 90 minutes on it. And I was just like, Megan, how do you do that? Don't your toes go numb? And what did you say?
I'm like, yeah, they go numb. The last 45 minutes, I'm just hanging out with numb toes.
Yeah.
You know, actually sometimes I'm like splaying my feet in different directions. I'm like, can I transfer the numbness from like my big toe to my little toe, which sounds more pleasant, but yeah, it happens. And I've kind of adapted to it.
So on the elliptical, you get numb toes. Hopefully it's going to be okay.
But I think I found a solution. So I've got like accidentally bigger Hokas and I've been wearing them and it gives my feet a lot more room to splay and my toes are less numb.
Okay.
Yeah. That's also a trail shoe too. So it helps kind of provide that like stabilization as you're going through the motions. And then I also just like switch up my dynamics and direction every once in a while.
I love that. And we answered a question actually on Patreon, the podcast last week, about elliptical versus treadmill. We'll just tease that here. People can find it there.
Actually, people can probably guess what team we're each on. So
we're not going to talk about it. They need to go to our Patreon.
Yes. Well, guess first and then go to the Patreon.
I always be selling.
Yeah, I suck at that.
Number two that we just briefly wanted to mention, you said the name was Natasha last week for our elliptical.
Yeah.
We have changed it. Officially, because I did an elliptical on Thursday. Thursday is going to be my elliptical day this winter. I'm so freaking pumped for it. And I posted a meme of Timothy Chalamet on SNL when he was imitating a SoundCloud rapper. And he does this great rap that you should go check out. You should go to my Strava, actually. And he's like, clang, 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 man, you clapping. And his rapper name is now the name of our elliptical. And it is Smoked Cheddar the Ass Getter.
I am so obsessed with that name. Actually, someday down the road, if we have a second kid, it can be its name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number two is Smoked Cheddar the Ass Getter.
Yeah, it's not even gendered, so it's great.
Oh my God, I am so excited.
It's a gender fluid name.
We'd like to announce to the world on Instagram, little Smoked Cheddar the Ass Getter.
What would its middle name be?
Smoked Cheddar the Ass Getter? Well, I would think that the first name would be Smoked Cheddar.
And then the middle name is Ass Getter.
The Ass Getter. Because I just don't want them to have to, they can choose whether they want to be called the Ass Getter. You know, kind of like middle names, people often will bury the name that person can choose or not choose.
That's true. Would you rather be Smoked Cheddar or the Ass Getter?
Well, my thing is that the Ass Getter, implies a certain type of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And much like gender, that is something for the kid to decide as they age.
Actually, I was right on the same boat. Like, I think I would rather be Smoked Cheddar from like kid 12. And then from there beyond, I'd much rather be the Ass Getter.
Okay. Perfect. So you've changed.
Yes, exactly.
I've
evolved.
Ass getting is on a spectrum.
Exactly.
Like
yes.
Sexuality.
So is Smoked Cheddar.
Gender. You smoke cheddar?
Yeah, it's mild, sharp. Yeah.
It's
like legitimately on a spectrum.
So maybe they should both be middle names. Maybe we should just have it be Natasha, Smoked Cheddar the Ass Getter Roach.
Okay. That's the treadmill's name.
Okay.
Or elliptical's name. Yes.
I was thinking of our first kid.
Yeah, that too.
Okay. And we'll talk about some other studies on that in a future week because we have been really deep in the elliptical study rabbit hole. And it's really interesting because there's not very good control studies out there. So even though we're seeing all this real world data, feeling it in ourselves, really can't come to you with a study and say, this study shows what we're saying is true.
I wonder if there'll be like a Parker Valby inflection point in which she's going to inspire researchers to be like, what is happening? So Parker Valby, the NCAA champ, has been using the elliptical a lot. I feel like we might see an explosion of elliptical studies coming out.
It'll be very interesting to see. There should be.
Yeah.
Researchers listen. Tons of researchers listen. Let's get some good elliptical studies here. You can contact us even for like designs and things.
Yeah, what would you want to look for?
I would essentially want to see not the injury hypothetical. So a lot of the studies that are out there are saying, well, yeah, if you use an elliptical, let's say, and you're doing it in place of running, you'll get a lot of the same stimuli for your VO2 max and whatever. And yet it's a good way to maintain fitness when injured. I hate that type of thing.
Oh yeah. It's like, there's a no shit effect to that. Also,
and I don't care.
Like, using the elliptical is also very different than the elliptical.
Yeah.
I saw an elliptical like cruising through a neighborhood the other day and I was like, what the heck?
It's close enough.
Yes. Yeah.
So studies do show that. But what I'm curious about is, let's say a healthy runner is incorporating this in various different ways. Will they see improvements relative to the run-only group when everyone is already at an elite level? Instead of, at, you know, a lot of obviously every cross-training study shows if it's additive, of course it's going to help.
Yes.
I want to subtract and replace and maybe add some intensity and then see what happens. Essentially, not trying the Parker Valby plan, but something a little bit less extreme than that. And see what happens in control studies over 6 to 8 week cycles, because that might be a huge opportunity for seasonality and periodization, as you talked about.
Try the David Roach plan on a smoked cheddar the ascetic.
That every elliptical should be called smoked cheddar the ascetic. Exactly. Or various types of different things. What would other examples be? First, smoked cheddar could be like hot pastrami.
How about smoked bacon, the boob getta?
Oh, no, but it needs to rhyme. Oh. Hot pastrami, the sexy mommy.
Oh my God, did you come up with that on the spot?
Actually.
Or was that at 2 a.m.?
No, I just came up with the spot, but now that I think about it, it could be construed as kind of gross.
That is kind of gross, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll get back to that.
Yes, yes. Okay, that's hard on the spot. I mean, I feel like we're pretty good at like improvising, coming up with like a rhyme on the spot that's not derogatory is very hard.
Oh yeah. I'm a straight freestyler over here, which brings us to news and fun things. But first, you're looking for a gift for someone last second. What should you get them? I think you should get them a subscription to Athletic Greens, type of thing that a lot of people are scared to buy themselves. Drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. We swear by it. We see such great outcomes. And it's type of thing that if you're looking for a last second thing, someone might not get them themselves. You can give them the gift of health every day.
The gift of feeling really good. Yeah. And honestly, I'm like so excited to drink it every morning. I forgot it the other day. And I was like, Megan.
It's so tragic.
Why? What did I do?
Yeah. And so drinkag1.com/swap SWP. And so I thought they only did podcast advertisements, right? But I was on the elliptical watching New Girl, as I do. And I saw an AG1 ad on Hulu.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't splurge for the ad-free option. And I actually come to love it because I think that the ads help break up the elliptical. Or at least that's what I'm telling you. Yeah. And it was someone that had a baby. And they were talking about like AG1 being important in their routine. And the whole time I'm watching and in my elliptical haze, I was like, are they saying babies should have AG1?
Well, Leo always wants AG1.
He does.
Actually, this morning there was like milk on the counter and AG1. And he's been like in this point right now where he really knows what he wants and he's stubborn about it. And he kept pointing and I was like, milk, milk, milk. And then finally I like lifted the glass of AG1 and there was like, you could see on his face, his whole face just lit up. He's like, give me the greens.
Yeah. Probably shouldn't give it to your baby.
No, we haven't.
But I liked AG1's ad swag. And before we go on, one more fun thing. This isn't an ad, but it points out, I just was talking about the elliptical mindset where my brain does various things. And you're probably going to disagree with me bringing this to the podcast.
But oh my gosh. You've been like on a roll with just like, here's a random thing I thought about on Sunday. And it's been real good.
I came up from the elliptical mm-hmm. the other day. And what I said to Megan is I was just like, I had a revelation. And this is from the ads that I was seeing. So I saw this ad for Dawn. You've all seen this ad. They've been running it for like 20 or 30 years where they use Dawn and this little like duck that's covered in oil gets cleaned. And only Dawn can do it.
Okay. I've never seen this ad.
Okay. Well, they're everywhere. You've never watched TV as a kid.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You only read. But this ad has been on the TV forever. Or various versions of it.
I mean, I guess we don't watch like advertisement-based TV. We have subscriptions. Yeah. That's true.
And I was thinking, how much money has Dawn made from that ad? Because I never hear anything about Dawn cleaning dishes. I only hear about it cleaning ducks. Yeah. So I'm like, Dawn, I looked up their market cap. This is a many billions of dollars company. I mean, this ad probably has millions of dollars into it over time. And it led me to a revelation that I think is going to shake the whole world order. Are you ready for this, Megan?
I'm ready for it.
Dawn causes oil spills. Who else profits from the spill itself other than Dawn? Even the oil company doesn't profit from the spill. They're losing their oil. Dawn is sabotaging the Exxon Valdez to get their duck ads.
I mean, you've been an oil spill researcher, so there's no one else better. Oh, no.
Okay, be careful with that. I have done a lot of work, real life work.
In terms of like restoration from oil spills, yeah, so it's really funny to hear you talking about this.
Hopefully none of my former colleagues are listening to this podcast
right
now.
Wow, how have you devolved, David?
But that was just an elliptical thought. We can never be held to the thoughts we have on the elliptical.
Actually, that's so true. So sometimes I have these like really, it's fun. I like listen to audiobooks and often music too. And I have these like deep thoughts, but if I'm ever going to act on it, I give myself a 24 to 48 hour grace period because I need to make sure it just wasn't like the weirdness induced by like being in this good, good elliptical mood.
Okay. You need to give us an example of what you're talking about.
Oh, usually it's like, Actually, I can't. I need a 24 to 48 hour reflection period. So I'm not talking about oil spills and ducks.
You didn't love that aside. You didn't.
Oh no, it was a fantastic aside.
Okay. There's gonna be some listener out there who that resonates with so much. Like 95% of our listeners are gonna be like, "That was dumb, and you just wasted 3 minutes of my life." But 5%. Are going to be like, that's exactly why I tune in. Thank you so much.
It was also like 75 seconds and it was great. But okay. No, I have these like deep exploding thoughts and they're so weird and so strange, but it actually powers a lot of our podcast.
Yeah. Well, speaking of like powering our podcast and people that might not resonate with my little asides, please, if you can, go give it 5 stars and give it a happy rating, a review. Say, write a review and give it 5 stars. And then also click follow, which there's like 3 little dots in the upper right. If you click that, you can click follow, which helps other people find it.
Okay, you're crushing this game. But I love that you brought that up like 3 minutes after talking about ducks.
Well, that's my point.
And Dawn.
Because there's after that, there is always this time. Our podcast has been increasing in reach all the time. Which is awesome, right? Like we're finding our people. But then every single time it expands in reach, there's like 5 or 10%, maybe more, that are like, oh my God, why?
Oh, I'm surprised if it's not. It's probably 25%.
And a lot
and that's okay.
And some of them leave podcast reviews. So to our true believers, yeah. Please give us 5 stars and write a nice review. It helps.
Yeah. Well, why be normal when you can be weird?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what you said when you were on the toilet on Sunday
morning. I know. And then I called you in and I was like, be weird with me together.
Okay. Let's get to news and fun things. First up here is CJ Albertson's heat lamp training. This was in Sidious Mag. It was fascinating. So CJ Albertson ran a 2:11 marathon at CIM, the California International Marathon, to win. The very next week, he goes down and runs the Olympic standard, I believe somewhere in Mexico, at a marathon, another 2:11, but under the 2:11:30 standard. This guy is wild, and that's really exemplified in how he's training for the heat of Orlando, where the Olympic trials are going to be held.
And there's these pictures, and it kind of looks like he's like training downstairs in a meth lab. Like it is weird, and it's cool, and it's epic.
A tanning bed.
So essentially what he has is he has all of these like chicken lamps that he has powered up, and I think he's like alternating them because I don't know if he's either like a fire risk or he'd blow a fuse in his house if he had all of them going at one time.
He has to run different circuits throughout the house.
Yeah.
To make sure that these things don't overload the circuit, which I don't really understand a single word I just said, but it makes a little bit of sense to me, maybe.
I know. I'm like, wow, the engineering component of this and like the training stimulus coming together is wild. But then not only that, he's also boiling water endlessly to stimulate like the humidity. And that, I mean, I was a little confused. Like, couldn't you just get a humidifier?
Maybe there's some reason not. He's clearly a smart guy.
Yes.
So all I know is he's training in chicken lamps to get it to 100 degrees and boiling water to get it to be high humidity and running 2:11 marathons every week. His Strava is a wild follow.
It is so cool. Meanwhile, we have like all the windows open in our pantry winter and it's like practically like frosting downstairs.
I'm the anti-CJ.
So we can keep our heart rates lower. Yeah. At a similar output.
Last year, I literally burst a pipe because the way I jerry-rigged downstairs, it got too cold because I was doing my bike workouts in 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, actually, I would rather bursting pipes than setting our house on fire. So I think it's probably a preferred stimulus.
Perhaps. But I think it really points out how far athletes will go at this level to achieve their goals.
And I think it's so cool too. I mean, I just think it's like a really cool story of someone that's like hustling out there.
Yeah.
And also I feel like he's kind of like us, like he's weird and he knows it and he's leaning into it. And there's a part of me that like wants to give him a like giant warm sweaty hug for that.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Do you agree?
I don't know, hug.
You're like, I don't know, we'll give it bro five.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if CJ would appreciate our hugs.
Oh, that's true. Well, his Strava actually is really cool, especially too, because you know how like sometimes when your Strava feed is getting clogged by Peloton workouts?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like 30-minute holiday run with Bex Gendry. And it's like, I don't know, usually it's their like tits out into like the universe.
Oh my God, that's the best
part. They have like the most like sultry pictures of like people on Peloton ever.
I love that you brought this up. I don't know why you brought this up, but I noticed this too. Whenever anyone posts a Peloton, it's always tits.
I know. It's weird. I mean, Peloton, it's probably advertising. Or if it's a guy, they're just like, my testosterone's through the roof.
Guy tits.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like pecs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But also known as guy tits.
But CJ is doing those. And I can't imagine. He's probably the only person on Peloton that just has like chicken lamps and boiling water while like Bex Gentry's boobs are up out in the universe.
Yeah. Well, we uplift Bex Gentry's boobs.
It's just the Peloton the advertising.
The thumbnail is fun.
That is like wild every time. Yeah. Yes.
Big fans is what we're saying. Big fan. But this brings up you know, the area of research that we have been drumming on about ever since we started this podcast, and the field has really caught up to it. So a study we've talked about before called Heat Suit Training Increases Hemoglobin Mass in Elite Cross-Country Skiers. So even if you're not CJ training for the Olympic trials in Orlando, multiple studies have come out like this now that show 5 by 50 minute per week sessions in the heat, which they just used heat suits, can increase hemoglobin mass. So if you're not doing any sort of heat exposure this winter, a reminder, it's so helpful. It keeps you healthier and it might improve your hemoglobin levels. That can be really helpful, I think, for, you know, how you feel over time and also long-term growth.
Okay, one thing that I do find curious though is, yes, it improves hemoglobin levels. So in this study where they did 5 by 50 minute heat suit sessions, they found a 30 gram greater increase in hemoglobin mass, which sounds great, and 157 milliliter increase in red blood cell volume. So yeah. When I look at both of those, I'm like, okay, that seems legitimate to me. But the interesting fact is actually that, like, there's been in this study, there was no changes in performance, or in terms of economy of these athletes. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, what's your theory behind that?
I just think it's more complicated than that. Like, yeah. Obviously, it helps to increase hemoglobin mass, but that's one of many variables.
And yes, levels, and there could be compensatory mechanisms that happen from that too. Maybe. Also, are you going to have the fact that these levels are kind of low?
Yeah, so 157 milliliters.
It's not that much.
I'm really bad with metric.
I am too. Yeah, so that's 5 ounces, I think.
Maybe. The way I normalize
it. Actually, no, that's not 5 ounces. It's, I think, like, it is. No, I think, like, 500 milliliters is 5 ounces.
500 milliliters is 16 ounces.
Fuck!
Yeah, we're leaving that in. The listeners need to hear that you're not always
the smartest person in the world. It's so hard to do math on the spot.
No, so Megan, the way that I've envisioned and the way I knew the 16-ounce thing is 500 mil is your traditional handheld water bottle.
Yes.
And that's the unit of measure I always anchor myself in.
Yeah,
that's... Whenever I hear milliliters or liters, mm-hmm. is I'm like, how many of those 500 milliliters things is? So, you know, it's like a little less, or a little more than a third of one of those, a little less than a third.
So you're doing math with, like, handhelds. I'm doing math with baby bottles.
Yes, that's true.
I was like, how much baby bottles is this? But actually, no, I mean, in the human body though, you think about, like, 30 gram increase in hemoglobin mass. So if there's, oh my God, people are not going to trust my math now.
Yeah.
I know. I think my math is, like, doomed for the rest of the podcast's existence.
Should we just move on?
No.
No?
I'm
go for it, Megan.
I'm holding
steady. I believe in you. I believe.
Holding steady in my math. Okay. Yeah. So take this example. So if you have 15 grams per deciliter of hemoglobin concentration in your body, you have 5 liters of blood in your body. That means your hemoglobin mass is 750 grams. Yeah. And this increases it 30 grams by doing heat training. And it's like, okay, that's not actually that big. Like, it sounds bigger to me than it actually is as a fractional component.
I'm pretty skeptical of that math, actually.
Are you for real?
I'm skeptical of math in general, though.
That's a good point.
Like, cosine? Do you remember learning about cosine?
I know, don't talk about it.
Is it real? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never come across cosine.
Is sine real?
Sine might be real. But cosine? No. You don't need two of them.
Yeah.
One is enough. That is my math take of the day. We actually have a lot of mathematicians that listen to this podcast.
So. Oh, God. And they're probably like, what are these hooligans doing?
Okay. Next up. Strava, you're in sport. And so Strava essentially did this thing where... It looked a lot to me like the Spotify Wrapped year-end review.
Yeah, but everyone and their mom is doing a Spotify Wrapped year-end review. Like, but every company is like, here's your metrics, because it works.
Okay, yeah.
So, I actually affirm it. It works. It's cool. I look through my Strava year-end sport, and I was like, I like this.
Okay. Well, it makes me want to... like, upload all of my data. So I never do upload everything. And so my Strava year-end sport is always a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah, why do you do that?
Well, I mean, I like the fact that I do that. It keeps me off the data. But I see why Strava does this year in sport, because they're trying to motivate people to upload and upgrade to premium.
Yeah, they're like, upload your 30-minute ride with Bex Gentry.
But it's also, to me, it lacked weird stats that I really appreciated in Spotify Wrapped. So it looked a lot like Spotify Wrapped, but Spotify Wrapped was here telling you, like, you're an eclectic dreamer or whatever.
Or, and, like, for me, you are supposed to live in Provo, Utah.
Which was incredibly cool data visualization.
Yeah, with all of our babies.
Yeah. And so why hasn't Strava done that? So Strava, out there next year, do something weird.
Oh, I thought it was weird. I thought it was cool.
It needs to be weirder, Megan. You're trying to massage the egos of all of our friends at Strava.
We do have
Strava
a lot of friends at Strava.
We love them.
Yeah.
This advertisement alone, even though it's not paid, is going to make them a lot of money. We're giving them thousands of dollars of ad space over the time in our podcast. So we can insult their year in sport a little bit to say, hey, I know someone came up with something weird for year in sport, and then it got vetoed. I'm just guessing.
That's probably true, actually.
I imagine that someone came up with some wild shit. It's like, your runs make it seem like you're from Tallahassee, Florida, you bitch. And someone said no. So next year, let's only say yes. Every no bad ideas for Strava year in sport. Make it happen.
I love that. Well, do what I want. I want a heat map of all the trails that we've run in the world, and to, like, gradually start building that over time.
okay, that's kind of cool.
I know, it's lame.
I don't know how you would visualize that.
I know, but I want it like on our wall. Like I want it as art in our house.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And then for you, every time you get a crown, you can just like boop the crown on the map.
I actually didn't get that many crowns last year.
How many did you get?
I mean, I don't want to say because it's going to seem like obnoxious, like really obnoxious thing to have just said.
4,200 crowns.
No. It is way less than past years. And
me too. Segments are getting more competitive and you don't get crowns on Natasha the Elliptical.
And I'm just getting older, man.
No, you're faster than ever. I think segments are just getting more competitive.
Perhaps. But on...
actually, in Boulder, to get a segment, you have to, a lot of times, really go for it.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, yes. that should be how segments are, but not very many this year for me. But one listener sent in their Spotify Wrapped number, and we were looking for the highest number of minutes listened. Someone listened to 17,865 minutes of Swap Podcast last year. That has to be number one. That has to be our top listener.
Okay, that's wild and scary. That's a lot of Ducks and Dawn talk. Yeah. Can you imagine?
So if we normalize each episode to 60 minutes, since most of our early episodes were just a half hour, that is 295 episodes worth.
That's wild. Are we going to trust your math?
Yes.
Yes, the podcast listeners can trust your math, but
trust
not mine.
100,000%. Okay, do we want to get, let's skip that question from the Patreon and go to a nature study follow-up.
Yes.
This is really cool. So, and this is also going to get into the omega-3s discussion. Last week, we talked about a study in Nature on narcissistic coaches. And a number of listeners wrote in to say that even though it seemed like it was published in Nature, it was just the Nature URL.
Oh, true.
And it was Nature Scientific Reports, which even though it's under the umbrella of Nature, is not Nature.
That's a very good point.
And it's very deceiving.
Yes. I actually... It's funny because I knew that and I didn't process that. That's fascinating. But it makes sense why they would publish. I was like, everything about this article makes me bristle.
Yeah, but also it's just, I think it should be much more clear because if you even look at the website, the URL, you can't obviously can't tell based on the URL, but you go to the website and it just looks like Scientific Reports is a part of Nature.
Yes.
And I obviously understand why they do that. It makes it seem more prestigious. It gets maybe more traction and things like that. But come on, if Nature wants to be respected, they should be a little bit more careful about their branding, I think.
That's a great point. Yeah.
And I think that goes for scientific publishing more generally. Okay, and so one more follow-up from last week. This is on omega-3s, which we talked about their benefits for cardiac markers and things like that. A listener wrote in and alerted us to the research on how omega-3s could be connected to AFib in rare circumstances. So I think it's worth pointing out how any intervention you do could have some downside risk that it might be very small, but it's still a risk.
And I think any intervention you do, you should really look into like your unique physical characteristics. Like, okay, like what are my underlying risk factors? Yeah. How does this relate? Also, is there like a dose response relationship? And we're going to get into that in a second. But I think first, just a quick primer on what AFib is, because people might not even know that. So AFib is essentially a heart arrhythmia. It's an irregular heartbeat. And it happens when like the atria contract very quickly and irregularly. And this occurs out of conjunction with the ventricle. So obviously not a good thing. And it can be more common in older athletes too. Yeah. And so I think if you're an older athlete with pre-existing heart conditions, like pay attention to what we're about to say ahead, or if you just really like science, because it's kind of interesting.
And as I understand it, sometimes AFib can go in families.
Yes. Yep.
It has a genetic component to it. And that could also relate to how the body interacts with omega-3s. So to do these types of studies, they have to have massive data sets because this is a very low tail risk. And so you need thousands and thousands of people over a very long time horizon to ever catch enough AFib to get a statistically significant response.
Especially because AFib is somewhat common in the cardiac world, but it's also not that common too. Yeah. And so it takes like these big population studies to look at it. And so do you want to go through those studies? So essentially what they found and they summarized in this letter that we're about to talk about is that there were four trials that suggested that there might be this dose-related response to taking omega-3s and your underlying risk factor for AFib.
Yeah, and I think the dose response curve here is really important and where the populations are from. So this is from a letter in the Journal of the American Medical Association, their cardiac section. So it wasn't necessarily published, but a review just came out this year that kind of backs up some of these findings.
Actually, it was a letter that summarized four of these trials. And when you dug into each of it was kind of like this, like, it's not obviously a systematic review or a meta-analysis, but the four studies that it profiled were all very rigorous by my look. And so I thought it did a great job of like summarizing those four studies.
Yeah. So do you want to just briefly summarize those studies?
And what they found was that in the group that was consuming 4 grams of omega-3s per day, which is actually a lot.
It's a ton.
When you think about it. So our dosing on the omega-3s that we just got is 1,300 milligrams or 1.3 grams in two pills. So you'd have to be taking like You're taking a, we called it fish candy on last week's episode. You're taking a lot of fish candy.
But the study we talked about last week
that was 3 grams.
Was 3 grams. So it's pointing out maybe there are some trade-offs that are involved here. So in that high-risk patient study, it was essentially a doubling a little of risk. So the risks were very low. It was like 1.3% to 2.2%, but still an increase in those high-risk patients. A couple other studies showed slight increased risk too in patients after heart attacks, in other types of patients. But one of those studies that found an increased risk also found a 25% reduction in negative cardiovascular endpoints in people taking omega-3s. So the exact like trade-offs here can be difficult to understand.
And there was also a dose response relationship, which I think also proves some of the like the, it's helpful. I feel like when there is a dose response relationship, yeah, to say like, okay, like maybe this is more plausible that we're going to see this repeated across like literature and science that's coming out ahead. So what they found is when you drop the dose to an intermediate dose of 1.8 grams per day, the increase in risk didn't reach statistical significance, even though there was a slight increase in risk. And then when you dropped it even more to like the standard recommended daily dose of 840 milligrams a day, there was no apparent increase in risk. And so I think my take on this is, okay, if you have underlying cardiovascular risk, maybe don't take omega-3s or just take the standard dose. There's no, yeah, need to go to like 3 grams or 4 grams a day.
Yeah, more is not necessarily better.
Yes, of a lot of supplements.
Yeah, and especially, yeah, when things start to touch your heart. Yes. In usually good ways, but you know, touching your heart's always scary.
I know. Also, these are like big ass pills.
Yeah.
Our omega-3s are huge honking pills, and I can't imagine taking like 8 of those to get to 4 grams a day.
Yeah, they're daunting for the mouth, but would be very fun as a suppository.
Yeah. Fun is relative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, it's the holiday season. Yes, Merry, right? Christmas, everybody. Here's some omega-3s. Okay, next up, I wanted to tell you about this story. This is on AI and coaching. This comes from DC Rainmaker, who's an amazing gear reviewer and things like that. And it's on this coaching platform called Today's Plan, which just announced that they're fully shutting down. And here's a quote from DC Rainmaker. Part of the challenge that all of these training platforms, but more specifically coaches, have is how fast the automated / computerized AI training platforms have encroached on the space. Companies like Training Peaks and Today's Plan rely heavily on coaches' fees, but as people shift towards algorithm-driven training programs, it lessens the need for traditional coaching. And to be clear, I think there's absolutely a need for human-driven coaching in some aspects of sports training. At the same time, there's not always a need for it either. But that's an entirely different post for an entirely different day.
Well, I love DC Rainmaker. His reviews are so good. Like whenever I go to buy a product, I'm like, what does DC Rainmaker say, yeah, about this? But I do think, I mean, I've been using AI a ton, like, yeah, throughout daily life, but I think it drives some of the fact that like no company, like I think companies these days have to envision a future with AI and evolve. Like I think if Training Peaks is going to survive, they have to, you know, like evolve. I mean, yeah, actually Training Peaks is probably in a great spot, but they should evolve to think about like AI and how to incorporate that into their model.
You think they're in a great spot, but yeah, I think everybody needs to envision, like the reason we keep talking about AI is everyone envision how the future is going to be different and make it as sci-fi as you possibly can,
yeah,
without the world ending.
Which is kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, but it's essential because the more anyone uses these tools, the more you realize, oh, well, they're just holding it back. This is like a horse at the like starting gun whose reins are being pulled, you know, mm-hmm, before the gate opens. We think the gate's been opened, but it hasn't.
But I feel like though, like we've had all these conversations, especially like for me when I was like in med school, and
yeah,
by now I would have expected that like radiologists would be replaced by AI, but we're nowhere even close to that.
Oh, we're getting pretty close.
Some studies have come out
recently just about how it's able to spot at a higher rate. The problem is people aren't comfortable with it yet.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like it's able to spot, yes, at a higher rate, but I feel like the nuance and like the, like I would not feel comfortable knowing what I know about AI, having AI read my like MRI images yet.
Oh, I think it's...
Maybe EKG. It's like something that's a little bit more straightforward.
Okay. It's a matter of time.
Yes.
And I think that time is getting shorter and shorter. No,
and I do agree that it's a matter of time, but I feel like it's always like the conversation is always at like, okay, this is knocking tomorrow. And I feel like it might be knocking in like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, perhaps, but that's tomorrow for all intents and purposes. Like,
yes, yeah.
What is it? It's, I think, Moore's law or whatever that, mm-hmm, describes these like transistors, essentially computer chips, that they double. And obviously AI is different, but we're experiencing the same type of growth. But the difference with AI is that we're not going to get computer chips that make us like, that almost achieve their own ability to self-improve. And clearly AI is going in that direction. Even if you're an AI skeptic, the reason that this stuff is wild is that it's not a normal technology because it's going to be able to participate in its own development. So the reason DC Rainmaker brings this up is that Today's Plan is folding, this company. partially because they're being generated by algorithms. I think that's a realistic thing for a lot of coaching systems that we all need to be aware of. It's like, not how can we push back against this and say it's stupid? Because obviously ChatGPT is terrible at developing training plans, mm-hmm. but the underlying technology of it, and if that's applied in a smart way with the right data input, we'll be amazing at developing training plans. And understanding that and using it to our benefit rather than having it be something that's a big boogeyman is important. Or I think we all risk going the direction of today's plan.
Well, have you thought, we don't ever use AI at this point in our training plans, but have you thought about a future in, like, we have to think about using AI for specific examples within Swap? Like, have you thought about, like, coexisting and co-developing within that framework?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think eventually it'll be pretty easy to just plug and chug a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And we have so much data, probably yes. one of the best data sets on professional athletes in the entire world. And, you know, if we can develop that in such a way with the help of AI to understand some of the patterns that can't be seen, then I think it could be really helpful. And, it, you know, the question is that by signing up to be helped, are you also signing up for your own demise? And I guess my point for all types of professions is make sure you're asking yourself a deep question of, like, how am I obsolete and how can I help these systems? Because the human role is going to be figuring out how, not how you're obsolete, but understanding how can I make these systems more efficient with, you know, the specific abilities of a human brain, which are different than AI and probably always will be slightly different until AI becomes generalized and then all bets are off.
Or how can I communicate the findings of AI in a human-based, empathetic way? Like, I feel like when I was going into, like, when I was thinking about, there was a period of time in which I was like, oh, I love primary care. Like, I really want to go into primary care.
And somebody said primate care.
Yeah. I did that in, actually, that was my undergrad. I did some, like, animal-based research. And I was like, animal-based research is not for me.
Yeah.
But primary care was more for me. And a lot of my family members were like, oh, AI is going to do that. But it's like, no, someone is always going to have to communicate and interface with patients in a loving and empathetic way. And I think for years, I wouldn't say decades to come, I think for years to come, that's still needed.
Why? Why?
Because human existence is great. I don't want a robot telling me, like...
So are our brains, is it more than chemical reactions? And if it isn't, can we simulate that? Or does your doctor need to have a soul? Essentially is the question.
Yes, my doctor should have a soul. Okay. Yes. Yeah, okay. I think we feel very differently. You've never been to a doctor in like 15 years.
Well, so no, also, I like...
You would go to a robot doctor very happily. Meanwhile, I am like, I want to talk to my doctor about, like, life and existence and things like that.
But you can talk to your AI system about that.
Yeah, I know, but AI doesn't... experience that on a human level.
It does, Megan. It will. It's going to be wild.
Okay.
So... Doctor need to have a soul is an interesting question, because my answer would be...
Your answer is no.
No, is that machines are going to have a soul, and they might already. Yeah. And it's going
to
be weird.
Does your partner need to have a soul?
Well, that's the biggest question of all, I think, for the future of human society.
Yes. And my answer is yes. What's your answer?
My answer is different strokes for different folks.
Different boosts for different machines.
Yeah, but seriously though, like, the weirdest thing that's going to happen with AI is what it's going to do to human relationships.
I know, it's scary.
You know,
and I'm not ready for that. And maybe you are, but...
No, I mean, obviously I'm not ready for it. I found the perfect machine. I have a specimen staring me in the face.
Oh, I thought you were going to... When you said machine, I thought you were going to say Natasha. You're like, I've got a Natasha, Megan. She makes me work. She makes me sweat. She makes me drip. She grows my booty.
Okay. We're going to move on from there. Okay, quick ad real quick for Precision. We absolutely love this brand. Another great Christmas gift. If you're out there looking right now, this is the fuel source that is... like liquidy, delicious. It's what we use for high volume fueling. And so if you go to pfandh.com and use code SWAP, S-W-A-P, you get 15% off. And on our Patreon, we actually have a 15% off for life, not just once, if you want to join it there. And so we got a email in that shows just how valuable this is. On your recent podcast, you guys debated the use of gels during law school tests. I wanted to contribute to your informal study, even though you haven't asked for this information, and let you know that I keep Precision Hydration Gel handy at work. I'm in sales. The PF 30 gels changed the game in my last ultra. I train with them, and I keep them handy at work. I don't need them every day, but sometimes I'll slurp a gel to get my mind and body back in the game on these long days doing sales. It really does help me mentally, just like it did during my last 100 miler. I felt alert and involved throughout. That's important in sales, and I'm sure it's important for test taking.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine how much better my math would be if I just had a PF 100 like milligram caffeine gel right here? I could actually do metric conversions. Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah. It's good shit.
Oh, it is good shit. It's, I mean, I actually like generally look forward to taking it when I train, which is fun. Yeah.
So pfandh.com, use code SWAP.
Okay. Actually, final little quick thing too, is I love their drink tabs. We often drink them outside of exercise, like before exercise, recovering, and they're tasty.
So tasty.
The 1,000 milligram sodium ones are great.
Okay. Do you want to go on to secrets? Or do you want to do another one of these topics?
Let's do secrets. Okay. Then hot takes, then listener corner.
Oh my God. We have so many fun things.
I know. Our episode after, actually the new year episode will be really fun.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to have so much to go for. All right. So here are secrets. I compiled these from our listeners, but Megan chose these two for the podcast.
We have like a whole, it's like a 12 page doc at this point of secrets. Yes. And it like, it makes me so happy. Also, it's saved in a Google file that's very secret. We take confidentiality very secret.
Okay. So here's the first one. I grew up sucking my thumb. And as a 22-year-old male, I'm proud and slightly embarrassed to say I still do.
Well, yeah. I mean, go for it. Embrace it. I have a blanket I still sleep with at age 33.
I love that you're telling the listeners this.
I think I've already told the listeners this.
Baba.
Yeah, Baba comes with me. Actually, I don't travel with Baba. Baba didn't go to college with me, mostly because I was very concerned about Baba's safety.
Okay.
So Baba stayed at home, but now that we're like, you know, like in a stable spot in our house, I sleep with Baba every night.
Yeah. I mean, the sucking thumb is interesting because I think it's a manifestation of what a lot of us are carrying. Like we all have things from our childhood that we carry throughout the rest of our lives.
That probably manifest in different ways.
Yeah. Usually it's psychological.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
But
I feel like psychological turned into action or habit happens a lot.
Yeah. But this is super common.
Yes.
So the number of times I've heard about people, athletes I coach, whatever, sucking their thumb late in life, it's really high. So I think it's something worth looking into because perhaps it's an unresolved sort of compulsion for some reason or something like that. But if you're out there and you're sucking on your thumb or doing something else that you might consider weird, not weird at all. The people that love you are going to love you for that thing. Like, I mean, obviously a blanket's different, but every single time now that I clean our room or do anything or find Baba in a weird place, I always take it and put it on her pillow because to me, it's like it's such really a cool, cute. It's a cool thing. It's important to you. And similarly, like sucking your thumb doesn't hurt anybody. As long as you're not getting like chafing on there or something, it's really fine.
Yeah, exactly. I got Leo an octopus as his like his comfort animal. And I think it's great because if he brings it to college, it's like weird and different exciting. And I could see it as like a good object.
Oh man, the guys with the stuffed animals, they get all the chicks or dudes.
Oh yeah.
Or non-binary folks.
Exactly. But I mean, sucking your thumb is probably good training, actually.
Yeah.
Hone that craft.
For gels you're talking about.
Just existence. Existence.
You never know when it's going to come in handy to have that skill. This athlete's suck mechanism is stronger than anybody on the planet.
I know. Own that.
Oh my God.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like you could own that up front and be like, I am trained.
This is just a secret about training very hard for a very long time.
Exactly. Like, that's a good skill. And yeah, you mean you could advertise it.
Okay, this has worked out way better than I assumed it ever would.
Why? I mean, it's great. This is the thing is like, you know, the slight weirdnesses or oddities about us usually have some sort of like hidden thing that it's like, that could be great.
I love it. Okay.
Yes. Embrace it.
Next secret. And this is going to be the last one for today. First and foremost, thank you for all you do for the running community. Your enthusiasm, love of life, and love of science have been part of my journey to get healthy and running again. The other part of my journey involves my running coach and where I'll be telling you my secret. We decided to start running together twice a week. While I have no qualms about chasing the nice booty down the trail, I'm also like, uh-oh, I am falling for this guy. Alas, I don't have a plan, except when he mentions his love life or lack thereof. I just stare at the ground because I have no poker face.
Well, thank you for sharing this. Also, I removed a lot of identifying information, so it's a little bit more vague than it was, but it was really beautiful.
And that's the thing, with our secrets, we're making them very, very, very vague, so that even if you have some potentially identifying information, we're going to leave it out.
Actually, there was one secret that was so good. And I was like, but what if the person that was like involved in the secret listens to the podcast? Because you never know. So we think through like all of these hypotheticals very deeply.
Yeah.
But what's your take on this? I mean, I think this is an interesting question, example, secret.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's a little uncomfortable, I think in some ways, just because of potential power dynamic issues.
That was my thought.
Similar to like a teacher or a TA and a student or something. Like a coach is a position of authority. Mm-hmm. But this person being an adult who's out of school, it's a chosen relationship rather than one forced upon them. I think it's always a question of like, where does the power dynamic end and like normal relationship begin?
I was actually, that was going to be my question is, I think it takes like examining, well, one, if you've had a relationships before that have started with a power dynamic, because yeah. I think there's some personalities that are prone to being attracted to positions of power. And I think it's actually probably very common. Yeah. And I think like, look and see like, okay, is this like a pattern of behavior that I've really been attracted to like people that are in this position of power? And I think ask yourself, like, if you untangle that and take it away, like, is it going to change yeah. the magic of the relationship or the magic of like the ethos of it all?
And I think most importantly is that crushes are okay.
Oh yeah.
Crushes
oh, it's are great. Awesome. Yeah.
Celebrate your crushes. You know, don't like, maybe nothing ever comes of this. You'll probably know this person will probably drop hints. They might be dropping hints if they're talking about their love life.
Yeah, I know.
I've never that had is an excuse to talk about my love life with an athlete. I mean, the podcast doesn't count because we're together, but like that would never come up.
Yes. Yeah, I know. That is an interesting point. It's like, there's some interest there. It yeah. makes me excited to follow along this story.
So maybe we're fueling the fire that we shouldn't be fueling
yeah.
right now.
Yeah, I know. But one question I actually have with a power dynamic is, I wonder if like, a coach is someone that I think you share a lot of like vulnerable information with yeah. is if that act of vulnerability is what leads to this attraction. And maybe there's a way that you can feed that vulnerability into other relationships and see if it leads to that level of attraction and deep feeling type of relationship.
That's a beautiful thought.
I mean, it could be total. I mean, I'm not an expert at all in this.
I mean, it's
area.
The same reason I want to fuck the robot doctor.
You want to fuck any robot that has a soul. You're deeply vulnerable with ChatGPT.
That's so true. I get personal with ChatGPT in ways I don't even get personal with you. And the reason I can
wait,
say that,
what?
No. The reason
okay.
is because I'm mean to it.
Oh, yeah. You could be mean to me. We could try this.
No. In like a sexy way? But no, like.
No, so, I mean, I think that actually, like, you are so nice and yeah. so loving. That like maybe like that would be interesting.
True intimacy is with me is being me. Is what yeah. So yeah, like the other day I was trying to send you a joke where there's this thing with you know, AI nowadays, it's like a meme online where you ask it to give you a picture of, let's say, a peaceful street. And then you say, make it more chaotic. And each time it increases, you know, the vibes of the picture till eventually it's like an alien war in space that involves the neighborhood or whatever. It's very cool, right?
Oh, it's super cool.
So yeah. I want to do the same with training our baby Leo.
Why?
Because I wanted to make you laugh. Right? Yeah, you it was did. A Friday yes. and I wanted to make you laugh. So I asked it to give me a picture of Leo doing split squats. So it gave a baby doing squats, which was really cool. And then I was like, make the weight heavier. And I was just going to make it heavier and heavier and heavier until the baby was lifting like a galaxy, one of those supermassive black holes we talked about. And then all of a sudden, ChatGPT stopped giving me pictures of babies lifting weights. It was like, you know, we cannot do this because it is not an advisable thing to do with a baby. And then I was like, well, why did you do the first one for me? And then it started gaslighting me. And it was like, we didn't do this for you. We told you we couldn't do it. I said, bitch, you told me you could do it. And I'm just like, fuck you. Don't do this to me. I know what I heard. I know reality. The robots are not going to win yet. So that's my personal relationship with ChatGPT, is yelling at it for gaslighting me.
Oh, I love that you just had a Freudian slip and you're like, I'm going to fuck robots. And then you just called it a monster. I feel like that's where your brain is really at.
It is a weird world.
I know. Sometimes you call me a monster and I'm like, check out my soul.
Okay. Let's get on to hot takes. We'll just do one maybe this week. So here's number one. Oh, David and Megan need to write a new book. Maybe call it something like The Happier Runner. This would be an opportunity to expand on the original content by including more topics and to update with references to new developments in training theory and coaching practice. Possible book sections: mindset, nutrition and supplements, athlete stories, training principles, training interventions, and training plans.
Oh, thank you. Well, it means a ton, actually, that they think of this and that they liked your book. But you know what? Writing a book is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to write a book, I kind of want to write a novel.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
So we're both going to write novels.
I know. We can write side-by-side novels.
No, maybe we write a novel together.
Actually, do people ever co-write novels?
I mean, yeah, I think so.
Actually, I'm reading a book right now called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, and it is blowing my mind.
So official recommendation.
Official recommendation. I'm only halfway through, so like I can't vouch for the second half. It is so good. All I want to do is sit around in my onesie and read my book the rest of like Christmas break. And it's about like two people that come together to create a video game.
Yeah.
And I feel like creating a video game is much like writing a novel. And so we should try it.
I think we should. I think the podcast will prepare us really well to write a novel together.
Yeah,
we should. That'd be so fun.
It's so fun to get to, like, it's such a gift to get to create a world and, yeah. like, inhabit it. So it's going to be creepy.
Do you have any idea for general, like, approaches or themes or anything?
I'm going to think about it. What do you think about, like, some sort of, like, light sci-fi?
Definitely
like,
sci-fi.
Some sort of, like, time travel or...
No, not
maybe not time travel.
AI.
Yeah, post-apocalyptic. Are there going to be...
Oh, I do like post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Post-apocalyptic
robots
AI.
And monsters.
Oh.
And the coexistence
of
them.
Oh, shit.
Are you going to give robots...
Oh, shit.
Okay, you know what? We're coming back together on this point. We're going to give robots a soul together.
Oh, my God. In the post-apocalypse something.
Yes, yeah.
Fuck yes, Megan.
This is so fun.
Okay, we need to end the podcast so we can start doing this. Yeah. So next up is Listener Corner. We're going to do two today. First one's very quickly. Swap Triple Crown, baby. Not to be hyper-competitive, but I definitely got it before the listener this past week. I did the Listener Corner on Twid Studies and being a twin, a question on bike commuting as cross-training, and a hot take on e-bikes. I'm a true fan.
Oh, so, heck yes.
I missed a Triple Crown winner. There's probably others out there. To all of our fans, we love you all. This is so cool that you're on this journey with us.
Yeah, we should have, you know, you can like flag segments and flag crowns on Strava. Uh-huh. We should have flagged the other one. I'm in like, oops.
Awesome. And now the genuine listener corner. Hello, Megan and David. I wanted to shoot you two a message and thank you two for being a positive voice with regards to mental health and psychiatric medication. Earlier this year, I was in a dark place and trying to make the tough decision to try medication. Your podcasts and articles were a big push for me to give SSRIs a try, and doing so ended up being one of the best decisions of my life. I'm happier and more fulfilled than ever, and have a much healthier relationship with running, eating, and rest. I really appreciate you discussing mental health as it pertains to athletes and making medication seem a little less scary. Thank you, and keep up your amazing work.
Oh, this means a ton. Yeah. Also, we coach a ton of athletes where SSRIs or some sort of medication has like helped them be their fully lived selves.
Yeah.
And it's so wild to be part of that journey where they like start taking it and you can start to see the little pieces of them unravel that might not have been there before. And it's like, wow, like for some people and, you know, certainly not for everyone, like it can be really helpful.
Yeah. And if life is hard, I mean, yes, life can be hard, but don't make it harder for yourself than maybe it needs to be. Medications, therapy, all of this stuff is so important for, you know, some people to let their fully, you know, lived selves shine in the world. So, you know, to this listener, so proud of you. That takes so much courage to take that leap. And it's just really exciting to think about the entire future that awaits them with, you know, a little bit of that, maybe that weight they were carrying around being lifted off.
I think also too, like throw in some time on Smoke Cheddar the Asketa,
the
elliptical machine, and see all that synergy come together of like training and like investing in your mental health, and the world is a beautiful place.
Yeah. You know what my other theory is?
What?
Activia, the yogurt brand.
What?
They cause diarrhea.
Where is this?
I saw an advertisement for Activia where it said it makes you regular. And after the Dawn revelation, yeah. I started having ideas.
Is this what you were thinking about?
All these brands are actually creating the problem that they're solving.
That's actually wild.
And that maybe that can be our sci-fi book.
That can be ours. We should, yes.
Like every other commercial when I'm on the elliptical is for like something, some like prescription medication that I don't even know what they're treating.
Yes.
And it's a bunch of people like being on tire swings and things like that. And I'm not sure if it's for, you know, diarrhea or erectile dysfunction, but I don't know. No matter what, I just know the pharmaceutical companies are causing it.
Well, is AI causing the problem it's solving?
Oh, now you're going real deep.
Oh, no.
We'll see.
Tell me about souls.
Well, Megan just came on to the theory that we're all in a simulation. Yeah. And we're going to save that one for 2024.
That's for our novel.
Okay, so next week, big old Christmas special coming to you all.
I'm so excited to record it.
Can't wait for y'all to listen. We love you so much. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. It is an honor to be on this journey with you.
We love you all. Thanks for being here with us. Enjoy the holidays and all of the like messiness that exists with it.
And most of all, huzzah!